And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to be with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn, next to the last day of the year, next to the last day of the decade. That's hard to believe, isn't it? Wow. And if you're of a certain age, you can probably remember Y2K, 1999, when we thought the world was going to end, whenever we flipped into the new millennium and computers were going to stop and cars wouldn't start and all this sort of thing. Nothing happened, of course, that New Year's Eve. That was 20 years ago. 20 years ago. Wow. Jill Hamley is shaking her head. She's our guest today. She's the director of the Prospect Community Library. Prospect Community? Prospect Area?
Correct. Prospect Community Library.
Community Library. One of the many public libraries here in Butler County, and a very active one. And it's a book talk day today. If you're not familiar with that, this is something we do at the end of every month. In cooperation with the library system of Butler County, the various public libraries take turns selecting a book, and then they send me a copy, and I read it, and then we talk about it, kind of like Oprah's book review program that she used to have. And Jill, the book you've selected today is what?
Kitchens of the Great Midwest by J. Ryan Stradel.
I had never heard of Mr. Stradel, and I had never heard of this book before. When I first saw the title, I thought it was a cookbook, because there's not only the title, Kitchens of the Great Midwest, but there's pictures of tomatoes and chili peppers and so on the cover, and I thought, oh, a cookbook. Now, I'm not a cook, so I thought, oh, I don't know whether I'm going to be able to wade through this or not. It's not a cookbook. It is a novel, a very different type of novel, and a fascinating read.
It's definitely in a different style, and while it's not a cookbook, there are some really good recipes in there that if you are a cook and like to explore and experiment with different recipes, you can.
There are a handful of recipes. You're not overwhelmed by them. There's a lot of talk about wines in here, which I don't know a whole lot about. I know a little bit about. But the structure of the book is different. It's a novel, first of all. It's fiction.
It is fiction.
But it's structured in eight, right? Eight chapters?
Right, right. Eight chapters, but they're not labeled chapters.
No, and they're actually short stories that, I mean, they're some of the same characters appear, not always. But it's the story of about 30 years in the life of the central character, and that would be Eva Thorvald. I hope I'm pronouncing the name
well,
correctly.
Well, yeah, and that area has a very, you know, there's the Danish, Swedish, Norwegian ancestry, and you can see that in the characters' mm-hmm. names, not just the main character.
Yeah, most of the setting is in the upper Midwest, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, in that area, and there were a lot of immigrants from Scandinavian countries who settled there
right.
and still live there. It's right. a very rich tradition of Norwegian, Swedish, Finnish, Danes, a rich tradition of Lutheran churches, which is and still the dominant religion in those countries and the dominant religion in that area. And that comes into play, too.
It does. You see that in a couple of the little stories, vignettes, chapters, however you decide you want to term them as you're reading the book.
Lutheran church dinners.
and the cookie contest, the bar mm-hmm. contests.
Mm-hmm. Well, at any rate, we mentioned the one central character, and I pronounced her name Eva. Is that what you said?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Her name is Eva. I don't even attempt to pronounce her last name because I'm not sure how that would be pronounced. I don't have any Scandinavian ancestry, so I don't have any experience with those names.
Thorvald, and her father's name, her biological father's name was Lars.
Right.
And that is a great Norwegian name. I can remember there was a show on TV when I was a little kid called I Remember Mama, about a family of Norwegian immigrants, and one of the kids in the family was named Lars. So I know
I don't know that show.
Norwegian name. So anyway, the central character is Eva, who's actually the daughter of the biological daughter of Lars.
Right.
And the story of about 30 years of her life told from different perspectives. Each of these eight so-called chapters talks about part of her life, but it's always someone else from someone else's point of view, which is a very interesting structure for a novel.
It is. It is. And to me, like when I got to the end, it's almost like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, like because she goes through all these eight vignettes and she is a central character going through them all. And sometimes it's from her perspective.
Mm-hmm.
The second vignette is definitely from her perspective. But you just see all these people that she makes contact with and how they're threaded through her life. And the last little vignette is really about how all that comes together. How small of a world it is, because some of the characters she meets, they know other characters and how they're related to the other little vignettes that are in the book.
And you'd have to say that it's a fairly modern setting, starting roughly in the 1980s.
And right, then going when she's for born.
About 30 years, which would take us into this millennium. And that's kind of where it wraps up, I think, around 08 or 09 or something like that, without being too specific. Yeah. There were some real surprises in this book. The first chapter, the first story, if you will, and you're right, they're not actually designated as chapters, but they're rather lengthy because there's only eight of them in the whole book. But it's from her biological father's point of view, Lars. And you get to know the guy and know a little bit about him. And all of a sudden you get to the last page and he dies.
Yeah, that's very surprising.
I thought he was going to be one of the main characters the whole way through the book.
Yeah. And it's very surprising because he's only, I think, like in his 30s, maybe. Like, they don't specifically say how old he is. But Eva's biological mom is definitely in her 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Lars is a little older, but not tremendously so.
However, when I got to that last page, and he suffers a fatal heart attack and falls down the stairs, and then I thought back, there were several mentions of him being overweight and out of shape throughout that whole first story. And then when I looked back on it, I said, okay, I guess they were.
He was setting
me up for that, yeah.
Yeah.
And
he was a wonderful father, though. So that first year of her life, or however, she's a baby when he dies. Mm-hmm. The book doesn't say specifically how old, but she doesn't remember him at all.
It's by turns, and the whole book is like this, it's by turns absolutely hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be laughing out loud, and then the next page, it's very sad.
What, right, because her mom even leaves her. Like, she starts out in the world very rocky. The mom decides after she has her that she doesn't think she wants to be a mom. Like, she doesn't like the idea of, you know, dirty diapers and feeding, and she misses being able to go wherever she wants. She misses the adventures of being a single non-mother.
Mm-hmm. And Eva's only a month or two old whenever the mom takes off. Cynthia is the name of the mother.
Right. Yeah, she decides pretty quick. She goes back to work, and she meets a sommelier, and she wants to become a sommelier herself, and she ends up in Australia.
Sommelier, by the way, is a wine steward. You have to pick up a few of the wine terms. Some of them got a little bit heavy for me. I mean, I'm beyond, ripple stage, but I'm not.
Yeah, I didn't know any of that. I just know the term sommelier. I didn't know any of the other, as they're describing the wines and the hints of oak or, you know, the various descriptions.
There's obviously a lot of talk about food in each of these stories. And from the very beginning, the funny part is Turn to my notes here. There's a specific kind of Scandinavian whitefish.
The lutefish. Lutefish.
Thank you for pronouncing it for me. Because I've lutefish, which we find out is a greenish-colored whitefish that has a horrible odor. At least that's the way he describes it. It's the smelliest stuff you can possibly imagine. And I'm trying to remember the circumstances. When in the town where they lived, in Duluth, somewhere in Minnesota, I think they were still in Duluth, the family, and the woman who supplied all this every year suddenly decided she wasn't going to do it anymore. And
I think she died. Did she just leave?
I can't remember. But anyway, Lars's father decided that he was going to take over the supplying the whole community with this. Apparently, it's a Scandinavian delicacy, especially at Christmas time, at the holiday season. And he of course, didn't do the work. He had his three boys.
Of course.
One of whom was Lars, prepare all the fish. And so, and this, I mean, it's a hilarious description over several pages about how Lars, when he was in high school, nobody would get near him. Girls wouldn't get near him because he smelled so bad. When he first started into this, I thought, what, doesn't he ever bathe? No, it's because he was working with this lutefish all the time and just horrible smell.
You would think his dad would have a little bit of mercy on him, but he did not.
One would think. I was reminded of there's a great movie. It's really a movie that I've seen several times. In fact, I have it in my collection called Crossing Delancey. Have you ever heard of it?
I have.
It's probably 15 or 20 years old. A wonderful story. It's I suppose you'd call it a rom-com. I'm not sure. But it's about this young Jewish fellow in New York. Delancey is the street that separates parts of Brooklyn, and I don't know a whole lot about that other than if you're on one side of the street, you're in a generally Jewish enclave, and if you're on the other side, you're not. Anyway, to make a long story short, he had a pickle store. His father sold pickles, and he sold pickles, and his hands always smelled like pickles. So
no one wanted to be near him, I imagine.
The girls immediately thought he smelled like pickles because he did. Anyway, as soon as I read this about poor Lars always smelling like this, and apparently this fish tasted horrible too, but the people up there loved it. You know, they had to have it at the holiday season.
It did not sound appetizing as the author was describing it, but it's really funny. One of the women in the library's book club, and we did read this a couple months ago, she is Scandinavian.
Ah.
And somebody else in the book club found out how she could get some lutefisk because she grew up with it. She enjoyed it.
Believe me, folks. The description that we're giving you is very mild and gentle compared to what Stradel describes this
fish. It sounded very nasty.
horrible stuff. I mean, I almost wanted to get past this section. But anyway, it was hilarious, you know.
Yes.
Hilarious. And then, you know, Lars finally is able to meet Cynthia, forget her last name, Hargreaves or something like that.
Yes.
And they get married and have Eva, their daughter, and then she suddenly takes off, and she just writes him a letter.
Yeah, she didn't even call him. Yeah,
no.
I know. Dear John letter in the rudest sense of the whole thing.
Never discussed it with him, just took off, said, you do whatever you want with anything I've left behind, my clothes, my belongings, I don't want them. She took off with this sommelier from the restaurant where she worked with, who had this very European name, something St. Gregory, whatever it was. And she took off with him, and she said, I'm headed to New Zealand or Australia. I'm not sure which.
Yep.
And I'll never see you again.
And then she did. She never heard. She never called. She never sent letters. They never heard from her again. And she did think in her mind that she was doing the best thing for Eva because she didn't think she would be a good mother at all. In her opinion, Eva was going to be better off having no mother than a bad mother.
Which was a strange rationalization, I thought.
Very strange.
I couldn't quite buy that. You know, why did she have a child if she felt that way?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Lars, on the other hand, was an exceptional dad for the short amount of time that he was able to be her father. And the list that he made up of the different foods that he wanted to introduce to her, because he was a chef. I don't think we mentioned that. Lars was a chef, uh-huh. and a pretty good chef, and loved cooking and wanted to introduce her. And he wanted to give her pork chops at 4 months old or some crazy age. And he gave the list to the doctor, and the doctor had to kind of talk him down. Like,
pork
no.
chops, you know, and he said, well, I could puree them, which is what? Put them in a blender and
make it all
chop
smooth.
Them into mush.
Yep.
The doctor just said, hang on, hang on.
She won't have teeth till she's 2 years old. You're going to have to wait.
Forgot to mention that Lars was a chef. In fact, that's where he met Cynthia. She was a waitress in the restaurant where they both worked. So anyway, she takes off with the wine steward. They go to Australia or New Zealand or somewhere. And here's Lars with this baby.
Mm-hmm.
Not even a toddler. I mean, she was an infant.
Right.
And what's he going to do? He wants to feed her all the healthy stuff and everything like that. And, you know, had to make arrangements for his younger brother and his fiance to babysit her while he was at the restaurant, because obviously there was no one else left to, you know, to take care of her.
And he was lucky to have his younger brother, and they weren't married yet, the younger brother and Fiona. But they loved Eva, and he was very lucky.
The younger brother's name was Jarl, I think you would pronounce it, J-A-R-L. At least that's how I said it in my own mind.
Yeah, Jarl, I'm not sure. I think I did listen to some of the audio version.
I was going to ask you if there's an audio version.
There is. On my phone, I got the one from Amazon that I could read it when I was reading, but then if I was in the car or doing something, I could also listen to it. And I think they pronounced it as Jarl.
I've never been into listening to books. I'm not in the car for long periods of time, and that's when friends and family that I know that are into that, it's because that when they're traveling, they'll put a
that's usually
CD in, and you know, you can listen to a book if you got an hour or two. I'm usually real short trips for me. It would be useless. But that would be a help in pronouncing some of these Scandinavian.
Yeah, because they are difficult. Names. There's a lot of consonants and in weird positions next to each other.
So here we have, just to summarize before we take a break here, we've got Lars, wonderful father, extremely caring, wants to feed his baby only the best stuff, organic food and all that sort of thing. His wife leaves him at the drop of a hat out of the clear blue. He's left with this beautiful baby, and he was able to get some help from his brother and his fiance. And you're thinking, well, okay, maybe this will work out. And then you turn the page, and he has a heart attack and falls down the steps. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh! And then, if you'll recall, when it moves to the next story, the next chapter, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you mentioned earlier that this is told from Eva's point of view. She's kind of telling
the
story.
Yeah, she's 10. She's 10 in this
Yeah, thing. And she's talking about her dad. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. Her dad is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then her mother, and then suddenly she mentions her mother, Fiona. And I'm thinking, what? And it takes quite a while in this particular story before you get the full picture that obviously Lars's brother and his now wife adopted her and raised her as their own child.
Right. And yeah, they didn't tell her.
And she never knew it. She thought that Jarl and Fiona were her real mother and dad.
Right, for about half of her life. But she does discover some things later on. But definitely at this point, she's 10 years old. These are her parents, and she's a typical 10, 11-year-old kid, and she's mad at them because she's not getting what she wants. She's thinking they're being mean and strict. So it does show the difference in these little vignettes and how she feels towards her parents, because this attitude in this particular vignette very much changes as you get through the book.
It was now that I began to realize one of the themes of this book. in addition to being to it being at times hilarious and at other times very, very sad. We're talking about family, what it means to be a family, how would you define a family, how has the concept of family changed from 50 years ago to today, or to today's society, and that sort of thing. And that rings through.
Oh, family is very important to her, and even friends end up as family. Mm-hmm. And family members, even family members who aren't immediate, like her cousins, who really are just cousins of cousins, if you look at who her parents actually are. She has a definite circle and a strong circle of friends and family who are extremely supportive of her.
And she needs them because we'll talk about this after the break. When she is at this very vulnerable age of 10, 11, however she is when the second story begins, she's bullied unmercifully in school. So we'll talk a little bit about that. When we come back, it's a book talk day today, and a very different and, to me, a very interesting read. The title of the book, selected by Jill at the Prospect Community Library, Kitchens of the Great Midwest by J. Randall Stradel, relatively new, published just a couple of years ago, I think.
And this was his debut book.
Mm-hmm. And it won a lot of prizes, too. Debut novel and so on and so forth by a lot of book publishers. Pretty good stuff. We'll take a break. Back with more here on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. Back right after these words.
ArmCo Credit Union has one sweetheart of a holiday gift for you this year. The event you waited for all year long starts a week early. They've slashed auto rates. Starting December 25th through February 29th, you can get an auto rate as low as 1.99% annual percentage rate. Check out armcocu.com or call 724-284-2020 for credit cost and terms. ArmCo Credit Union is closed Christmas Day, but you can still apply for a loan online or on the mobile app in three easy steps. ArmCo Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back. If you're just joining us on the It's Your Turn program today, welcome. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Jill Hambly. Jill is the director at the Prospect Community Library, and you've been director there for a few years now, huh?
Almost 5 years. 5 years in February I'll have been there as the director, but I've been there since 2007 in other capacities.
Let's talk a little bit about the bullying that Eva was subjected to when she was in high school.
Well, she was very tall for her age, which she took after her biological mother. Mm-hmm. At the age of 11, she was taller than most full-grown women already, so she was gangly. She was extremely intelligent, and she loved growing hot peppers in her closet. So she was a little unusual, which made her the target of bullies, unfortunately.
Yeah, and they really bullied her unmercifully.
Sexual harassment, as well as the taunting and the name-calling. It went far beyond anything that I would hope would be acceptable behavior on the school bus.
One incident, I was just going to say, it was one incident on a school bus where one of the boys dared another boy to kiss her, and, you know, I'll give you $5 if you kiss her or whatever. She forcibly does.
Yes. Which personally horrified me to know that was going on, and the bus driver wasn't even, and none of the kids said anything. Nobody did anything.
Yeah. However, she did get back at them, didn't she?
Oh, she did. That was awesome. Yeah, she, because of the hot peppers that she grew in her closet, which is a little hard to believe. I mean, she's 10, 11 years old, and she's growing these. Yeah, it's a little far-fetched. But it's interesting to think. I'm sure there are kids out there. They have the chef show with the chef junior with the little kids that cook. You know, maybe I could see one of them doing something like that, growing hot peppers. And she actually sold the peppers to a Mexican restaurant, and she developed some pepper juice concentrate.
That whole thing was a little bit too contrived for me. First of all, she's 11 years old. She's selling these or growing these chocolate habaneros. I didn't even know the word chocolate chili peppers, but apparently there are.
Mm-hmm.
So how does she get the equipment to grow chocolate habaneros in her bedroom closet? Her older cousin, Randy, decided he was going to quit marijuana, and he gave her all of his growing equipment.
Which, that's part that kind of made me laugh. I'm like, okay, he's trying to be a good older cousin, so he gives her his weed-growing equipment. At least she was growing habanero peppers and not weed in her closet.
But selling them, at that age, selling them to restaurants, and they were apparently, they're hydroponic, by the way, folks. She would turn on the grow light before she left for school in the morning, and she left it on so many hours a day to imitate the hot, arid conditions that these peppers would ordinarily grow in Mexico or Central America or whatever. I just found that a little bit hard to swallow.
I did as well, because you're right. Here's this 10-year-old who, like, she's taking pH samples of the soil and everything, cross-pollinating, all the stuff that you would not expect a child to do. But it was still a funny chapter that made me laugh.
However, this was a child whose father had given her pureed pork chops when she was just a few months old. And she had, and they, Stradl uses this phrase to describe Eva many times throughout the novel. She had a once-in-a-lifetime palate.
Right. She could taste things that other people could not. So, you know, you're having dinner, you're having spaghetti sauce, she could taste it and tell you exactly what was in it.
So this would be like a dog who can smell things that humans cannot, I guess, huh?
Right, right. And I really, if you think about it, genetically speaking, it could come from, like, her mother's a sommelier. So obviously, to be a sommelier, you have to have a good palate to be able to tell the differences in different wines. Her father was a chef and loved to cook. And even though he died when she was a baby, she still had certain exposure to that when she was young. So she kind of had the best of Lars and the best of Cynthia in those abilities.
They talked about some of the mean girls in her class gave her the nickname of Sasquatch, and they called her that all the time. She really was.
She was very tall. Yeah, they just
bullied.
Didn't. Right. She was bullied by everyone around her. That was her age. And even her parents, they didn't bully her, but they didn't fully understand her. So she had a hard time getting along in the world for a few years.
She did. That introduces another, it's a minor character, and I have no idea how to pronounce this name. Aracely Pimentel, who was a chef at Lulu's Mexican restaurant. They bought her chocolate habanero chili beans.
Right, and that's who she was selling most of her products to. And she would go after school. Her cousin Randy would pick her up, even though her parents, especially her dad, Jarl, did not like Randy because...
Why was that? Did they knew that he was doing drugs and stuff?
Well, because he was older by about 10 years, yeah. I think. He had some rough teenage years where he got into trouble. He'd been arrested. So they didn't think that he was a good influence on Eva, but Eva really liked Randy, and Randy was fantastic with her. They had a very close relationship. So he would pick her up. He knew everything that was going on with all the bullying, so he tried to help her out. And he would take her to the Mexican restaurant. That was her first family outside of her family, was that Mexican restaurant.
And there was Randy had a sister too.
Right. Her name is Brock. And she turned out to be a classic overachiever, at least for a little while. But Brock also very much loved Eva. They were more like a brother and sister to Eva than cousins.
I'm trying to remember. I know they were cousins, but there were a lot of names in there, and I can't remember exactly. Oh, they were the children of one of Lars's other brothers, right?
No, actually, they were the children of Fiona's sister. So Lars and Jarl were brothers, and Jarl married Fiona. So Fiona's sister, it is a little difficult if you're just not writing it down a little bit, I guess.
I remember
that now. So that's why they're not direct cousins. They're not. Like, biologically speaking, they're not related at all.
Cousins-in-law.
Right.
Amy Jo, wasn't that her name? The mother?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So Amy Jo is Fiona's sister.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about two of these eight so-called short stories, and I'm using that term loosely because they're not actually independent short stories, and they're not actually chapters. But they are kind of stories about Eva from different points of view.
Right. They're short stories that have to do with her own personal life, like the eight stories from her life that meant the most to her, that had the most impact on her.
We're talking with Jill Hambly, the director at Prospect Community Library. It's a book talk day today. Kitchens of the Great Midwest is the title of the book. It's a couple of years old. Written by J. Ryan Stradle, who is a chef writer or something, isn't it, for some magazine, some food culinary magazine?
Up. So that wouldn't surprise me, though, because he obviously knows what he's talking about. Mm. Even with, like, the heirloom tomatoes, they go into these long discussions, and he knows so many varieties that I had never even heard of before.
But this is his first novel.
It was,
Quite the debut.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too. It was different. It was quirky at times.
Quirky is a good description.
But it was a pleasant and a pretty quick read too, despite the recipes occasionally descriptions of wine, which were a little bit above my head. Who are some of the other people whose point of view we're looking at in some of these other chapters or stories?
Well, Brock is the next one where it's told from her point of view. She's at Northwestern University on a softball scholarship, Division I softball team. She was first string from the time she was a freshman. She had a 4.0. That first couple pages, it details her schedule, like, down to the minute. Like, she had her lunch scheduled, and she actually had two lunches because she was constantly training and trying to improve. She had all of her study times listed. Like, she was very strict with herself, and she knew what she wanted to achieve and did her best to do that.
She was still older than Eva, but she wasn't, 'cause Randy was, like, 10, 11, 12 years older than Eva, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, in that section, Eva's about 11, because it's right after the bus incident with the habanero peppers. She runs away from home, mm-hmm. and she runs to Brock, because Brock is like a sister to her. So she gets herself to Northwestern, which is a megabus ride away.
It's in Chicago, by the way, if you're not familiar with Northwestern University.
Right. And she, at the time, I think Eva's still in Minnesota at the time, because she does move a couple times.
Not in
she
Duluth, though. Much of the rest of the time, they're in the St. Paul, Minneapolis area, which is considerably
bigger.
And south than Duluth is way up in northern Minnesota, I believe.
Okay.
So anyway, they move around a little bit.
They do.
Another character who pops up is Will Prager.
Yes, and Will is the next short story after Brock, and Brock helps her through the situation that she's in a little bit. And Will is, I don't know if she's a, he's a first boyfriend, but they go out on a couple dates together.
They dated for a while.
Right. And Eva was about 16, 17 at the time. She was a junior in high school. And Will is actually responsible for introducing her to the Steamboat restaurant, which becomes, or at least a couple people that she meets through the Steamboat restaurant, become central in her life for the next few years.
Who's the character in the novel who enters her her homemade candy bars in the country fair contest?
That is Will's future stepmother. So that happens a little later. That happens probably about 5 years later. Will's biological mother has died. She was in a motorcycle accident. Will's dad was driving the motorcycle. The mom died, and the dad, I think, just hurt his ankle or something. So there were several years that the dad didn't date, didn't, you know, wasn't involved with anybody. But then he meets Pat Jorgensen, I think, maybe is her maiden name.
I remember Pat is her first name.
Pat is definitely her first name, yes. And then, so they get married, and Pat is very much into the Lutheran church that she belongs to. She's a very close member there, and she is known for her, I don't know, are they called peanut butter bars? They are peanut butter bars.
I'm searching through my notes here because peanut butter and caramel and chocolate chip homemade candy bars.
It is amazing because I actually made that recipe for my book club.
Really?
Yes. And it actually tastes like a Reese's peanut butter cup, homemade Reese's peanut butter cup, only better because it's, you know, your own homemade ingredients.
Well, it's one of the things they talked about. Pat's famous homemade candy bar, and they pop up occasionally throughout the rest of the book. It's one of those things that you just you have to smile.
Yes,
you know, you have to laugh.
Well, because you can picture it even at the Butler Fair.
Absolutely.
Or the farm show. People, like, we do stuff exactly like that here.
People entering their cakes and their pies and their you know, tomatoes and stuff at the farm show and the Butler County. Sure, we do it here just like they do it in Minnesota. We'll take a break. We're talking about Kitchens of the Great Midwest, the debut novel of J. Ryan Stradl. By the way, his name is spelled Stradal. We think it's Stradl. I have not heard him interviewed on TV or anything, but
That's just my guess.
Stradl. Well, if we both think it's Stradl, then it's Stradl.
We'll have to call and tell him.
We'll talk more about this different but very pleasant read, Kitchens of the Great Midwest. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. A special message at Christmas and holiday time from the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. They would not only like to wish you and yours a very, very merry and holy Christmas and a happy new year, but also to say thanks. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all of those who have supported them in their efforts during the past year. Thanks to those of you who donated to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store, to those of you who patronized the thrift store. All the proceeds there go to help fund the food cupboard and the client aid program. And thanks to those of you who donated provisions to the food cupboard throughout the year. And thanks to those of you, too, who donated extra produce from your garden during the harvest season to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul food cupboard. Thank you so much. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all of you and yours from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul in Butler.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus,
we're going your way. Getting there starts here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem, the bus will get you there. Cause that's what we do.
Hop the bus,
leave the driving up to us.
The bus,
we're going your way.
A
Welcome back. We're talking about this month's selection for Book Talk, the novel Kitchens of the Great Midwest by J. Ryan Stradel. Jill Hambley, the director of Prospect Community Library, is here to talk about it. I mentioned that I'm no expert on wine. I know a little bit about it. I know what wines I like and what wines I don't, but there were places here where it got pretty detailed because Eva, of course, was a great chef, but Cynthia was a sommelier and knew a whole lot about wine.
Yeah, and there is a section, the last section, you hear back from Cynthia a lot, and you kind of you see where her life is at that point and why she's made some of the decisions she has. And because she is a sommelier, you hear a lot about wine in that section.
Well, let me read you a couple of sentences here where my eyes kind of glazed over. This was in the Tetegosh winery where Cynthia, when she'd come back to the United States, was working, and this couple came in to do some wine testing. She says, "We'll start you off with the Sauvignon Blanc." "That's okay," the man said, waving Cindy off. "The Bordeaux whites around here have too much Melo." He was using wine speak for malolactic fermentation, a process by which tart malic acids in red wine and some whites become soft, sometimes buttery, lactic acids. Okay.
Yeah, that means nothing
I'll
to me.
I'll take your word for it. Now, I don't say this, I mean, there's not a whole lot of this, but there are times in here when I was just a little bit beyond my comprehension of wine tasting. But after all, by the way, she's Cindy at this point, no longer Cynthia.
Right. She's, and I don't know, it didn't really explain why she decided to do that. She
was just going by Cindy these days. Of course, she's long left the sommelier that she fled Lars with and went to New Zealand. In fact, she ditched him or he ditched her, one of the two, after only about 6 weeks.
Right. Yeah, that didn't last long.
But she eventually comes back to California. And it is while she's working as a wine steward at this winery, and this couple comes in, this young couple, and the guy's trying to impress his girlfriend about how much he knows about wine, and she's making fun of him with all this stuff that I just read. But then he drops a bombshell.
Right, yeah. She didn't. She had no idea what her daughter was up to. She
hadn't kept
in touch. She hadn't
made no
followed
attempt.
Her.
Even when she came back to the United States, made no attempt to look up her daughter or find out. She has no idea that Lars is dead.
Right. She doesn't know any of it.
No.
Right.
Nothing. But this guy mentions something about he and his girlfriend have put themselves on the waiting list for something called the dinner, in quotes, the dinner. And she says, "What's this all about?" And he says, "Well, it's this famous chef named Eva Thorvald." And she just stops her in her tracks because she realizes it's her daughter.
Yeah, but yeah, because the name, that name is not like Jane Smith or John Doe.
No.
Like there aren't that many people with that name. So to know that the age is right and the name, and it made sense to Cindy also that her daughter would be involved in food because Lars was involved with food.
And this is now 24 years after she had left Lars and her daughter.
Yeah, so she was very surprised to hear about the dinner and immediately went home and figured out how to make reservations.
She wanted to see her. She wanted to meet her. Whether she wanted to talk to her or not, I'm not sure at that point, but she wanted to see her.
Right. She wanted to know a little more about her daughter, like what had happened, the kind of person she'd become. And I don't know if she really knew whether she wanted to speak to her directly or not.
Well, and this is a part that I didn't understand. I've heard of pop-up businesses. In fact, we've had some even here in Butler. Occasionally downtown there'll be a pop-up business where there's a vacant storefront and business will pop up for, you know, a month or 6 weeks just to kind of test the waters, you know,
right.
And then they go and pop up somewhere else. But this concept of pop-up dinners,
well, like,
and the foodie culture that's apparently becoming more widespread in the U.S., this was new to me, Jill. Were you familiar with this?
No, it's new to me, but it sounded very intriguing. Like something, especially the way they did it, they turned it into an adventure. When they first had started it, it was just a way to make some money. Because it costs a lot of money to have an actual restaurant storefront.
Mm-hmm.
So they were looking for a way to have these dinners without having to pay that kind of overhead. And the more popular it got, the more the whole concept changed. So they limited the number of people and they made it elite and they created an adventure that went with it.
And this was Eva and who else? Who else teamed up with her to start putting these dinners on?
Elodine, I think, was one of them. And then there was another woman that they offered to have her be a partner. And man, was she kicking herself at the end because she decided not to. She didn't think it would do anything or be worth anything.
If you wanted to attend one of these pop-up dinners of Eva, you had to get on a waiting list. That took several years.
Yes. I think it was 3 years that.
Like signing up for Steelers season tickets or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you could get on a regular waiting list or something called a priority waiting list. You had to pay an upfront fee that was non-refundable.
Mm-hmm.
It was like $120.
Right.
You had to pay when you made a reservation. You wouldn't find out whether or not you were invited until the week of the event. So you had a week, and if you for some reason couldn't go or they couldn't get in touch with you when they pulled your number, that was too bad. You lost your $120, you were done.
Right.
And then, of course, there's the cost of going to the dinner.
Right, yeah, because you had to fly there. Most people would have had to fly there.
And it was $5,000 for this meal.
For each person, so because you bought two tickets at a time.
This kind of blew me away. It was kind of like the 11-year-old girl growing chocolate habaneros in her bedroom closet.
Yeah.
$5,000. Who can afford to pay $5,000 for a dinner?
Well, they really limited the number of people that were invited. So if you think of it that way, think of it as a vacation, like the one couple, it was their honeymoon, and they had started a Kickstarter, and their friends all paid for this honeymoon for them. But there, I think you'd be surprised how many people out there would, I would not do that.
I couldn't do that.
I couldn't and wouldn't do that. But I know there are people out there who would. And because she was limiting it, I think it was 20 people,
mm-hmm.
that it was max.
Even less than that, the one that they end up describing in the last chapter.
Yeah, I think there's only 16 maybe at that one.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's hundreds of people that they're getting to spend this money. It's a limited number of people.
And from what I understand, the location moves around. Am I correct on that?
Yeah. Yes. It's an adventure package.
Wow,
there was an adventure package actually called that the honeymooners did.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was always a different. It's like taking a vacation. So if you got chosen, I'm sure people would. I know if I got chosen and somebody was paying for me to go, I'd spend the whole week wherever the dinner happened to be.
And that's the concept of the pop-up that we were talking about a few minutes ago. You know.
Mm-hmm.
They would go to an area, pop up, serve the dinner, invite these 16 to 20 people, and that would be it. They would tear down and go somewhere else. And she only did it like 4 or 5 times a year.
Right.
Well, at $5,000 a diner, that's all you'd have to do it to make a living at that kind of a price.
Yeah. Yeah, plus I really liked how that last chapter or vignette, how she decided she picked South Dakota because that's where the best walleye was. And then the walleye kind of related back to the chapter with Will Prager. And she was growing the corn for 4 years there. And then the corn relates back to the chapter on the dinner parties where this concept first took hold when she made the succotash. So everything in that last vignette can be found to have a start in one of the earlier vignettes.
Again, it was difficult for me to suspend my disbelief when I got to the price of a dinner. By the way, it's a 5-course meal.
Mm-hmm. With little itty-bitty, it's not like huge amounts, little itty-bitty amounts.
I've never been to a 5-course dinner, have you?
No.
No, I haven't either. And that was my first question. How could you eat, at Christmas time for the Christmas family meal, I ate too much ham. and I was uncomfortable for the rest of the day. And that was one course, 5-course meal.
The way they describe it, because even when the walleye came out, Stradel is talking about the one gentleman, I can't remember which one it was, but there were only two little pieces. So they're eating tiny little amounts at each of these courses.
And there were... I have to get another break in here, but I want to talk a little bit about this dinner because this is the way these vignettes, these stories are told. Sometimes you're laughing and sometimes you're crying at how funny and how sad it is. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Kitchens of the Great Midwest. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be back after these words.
How do you choose a funeral home? Reputation? The facility? A general feeling about the organization itself? Should you consider cremation? And of course, cost. I know you have many questions, so let Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler help you with some of the answers. We know our business and how to serve the Butler community. After all, we've been here for more than 90 years. A third generation of the same family is dedicated to this service. Thompson Miller provides complete services with dignity in the funeral home, at graveside, and for entombment. Thompson Miller is here to help you through the planning process with advice, counsel, experience, and compassion. Call us, and we'll help you make these important and sensitive decisions. 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, because we care.
Tobacco for Less is perfect if you like to think big. Tobacco for Less is Western Pennsylvania's largest glass emporium, which has hundreds of glass pipes, a custom walk-in humidor stocked with a huge selection of cigars, and a 19-foot vape juice bar. They're always stocked with standard tobacco products, and their health and wellness department maintains a wide selection of CBD products. Tobacco for Less is always expanding and adding to their product lines. Be sure to check out their Sharon location that has just added a large health and wellness department. Stop by one of their locations in Butler, Sharon, or Aliquippa for all your smoking and vaping needs.
And happy holidays from Tobacco for Less.
Our time grows short. It happens that way, Jill, when we're talking about an interesting book, doesn't it?
Yeah, time flies when you're having fun.
Kitchen of the Great Midwest. I do want to talk a little bit about this last chapter because it's the dinner, and
right.
It is described in great detail. There was a film that I saw many, many years ago, at least 15, maybe 20 years ago, called Babette's Feast. Have you ever heard of that film?
I haven't.
Coincidentally, it's about Scandinavians, and Babette is a cook who decides for this very strict family to whip up this incredible feast, and that's mainly what the whole film is. But with these, I haven't seen it in many, many years, these incredible close-ups of her preparing these, duck and all this other exotic in this godforsaken territory, in the middle of winter. But it was a prize-winning film.
Okay.
Babette's Feast.
I'll have to look it up.
Got nothing to do and you want to see a good movie. But I was struck by the... comparison of the last chapter, the last story in here about the dinner. And yes, Cynthia, who is Eva's biological mother,
mm-hmm.
does get picked. She's now having ditched the guy that she ran away with from Lars, and then she was married to some other guy who died of, I don't know what it was, an aneurysm or something like that.
He was scuba diving and had a brain aneurysm while he was scuba diving.
Now she's got, this would be her third... Well, it's actually her third ex-husband because
right.
She's divorced from, what's his name, Ronaldo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ronaldo.
Ronaldo is the one she's at the dinner with, but they are divorced.
Well, whenever she heard the name Eva and realized it was her daughter and signed up for a chance to be invited to the dinner, she was still married to Ronaldo. They subsequently were divorced, and 3 years went by, and suddenly he calls her out of the blue and says, I got picked.
Right. Right. Yeah, she had put it in his name, whether Mr. and Mrs., whatever, but it was his name. So they called him.
He said, I'm taking my... He had remarried by this point and had a child, and he says, I'm taking my wife. And she says, no, you're not.
Yeah.
I'm taking that other seat.
Right.
And so she ended up going, actually, and saying, you know...
she had to be a little forceful about it because he was quite certain that she was not going to go.
And she said, I'll see you there. I'm going to be there.
Yeah.
So she does go. But disappointingly, she finds out that Eve is not going to appear. First of all, she doesn't eat with the guests. She sometimes pops in to say hi during the middle of the two dessert courses. But they're informed that she's not going to be there that night because they're too busy.
Right.
She's come all this way, and she's determined that she's going to see her. And so she sneaks into the... They set this up out in the middle of a field somewhere. The kitchen's in a tent.
Yeah.
And she goes into the tent, and there she is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like sitting around a campfire, I got the impression, kind of thing, afterwards, relaxing, because the people who helped prepare the food, it was their turn to sit down and eat.
And a remarkable bit of writing here where Cynthia, now Cindy, mm-hmm. says, it was the first time I'd seen my cheekbones.
Right.
And my eyes when she looked at Eva, because obviously there was a tremendous resemblance.
Yeah, and Stradel does kind of make mention to that throughout the book, like the tall, the blonde hair. The descriptions of Eva really are very similar to the description of Cindy at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. And she actually says who she is. She says, I'm Cynthia Hargreaves.
She doesn't say, I'm your mother, though.
No. There's no reaction from Eva.
Right.
No reaction at all.
But at the end, when Randy talks to Cindy, Randy does tell Cindy, you know, he's like, are you somebody that matters? You're the third Cynthia Hargrave that's come around. Are you one that matters? Should we, like, go further with this? So I was really surprised how Cindy reacted to that, though.
Yeah, it was a very unusual ending.
Yeah, it didn't wrap up all happy and sweet like you would expect.
Absolutely not, you know.
But it also wasn't an unhappy ending. I think it was more of a truthful ending, if you really think about it.
This is a book that kind of sticks with you after you finish it. I finished it this past weekend, and it kind of been rolling around in my mind ever since.
Mm-hmm. I had read it a few months ago, so I skimmed it this weekend. And even though I was just skim reading it the second time around, I really got so much more out of it because there are a few names. So reading it the second time, knowing where it was going, I was really able to pay attention to the people throughout that were going to matter, that were all going to show up in the last vignette. Because one of the things that Stradel says is he keeps mentioning a certain combination of people. And at this dinner in the last vignette, it's very much set up with the certain people, with Will Prager and his new wife there. And they'd been on the list, or Will Prager had been on the list for years, even more than 3 years, since the very beginning. So it was very much like Eva went through the list of people and kind of handpicked at least some of them.
Our time runs short. Our time has run out. But I have to ask you, what did your book clubs think of this? I assume that it's been...
The one book club enjoyed it, and another book club didn't. They didn't like the vignettes. They didn't think the vignettes were all connected enough. And a lot of them in the library book club didn't like how it ended. They wanted that wrapped up, pretty ending.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes novels end that way and sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Same with good movies, you know.
Yeah, not life isn't always wrapped up in a pretty bow.
Well, good pick, and I'm glad you picked this because I enjoyed reading it.
Oh, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Kitchens of the Great Midwest by J. Ryan Stradel. Jill Hambly, the director of Prospect Community Library, visiting with us today to talk about it. I'll give you my copy back. I think this is from Cranberry's Library. If you can put it on the truck and get it back there in another day or two, there may be some people that want to read it.
Sure, absolutely.
Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you, too.
Always good to talk about books with you. And Happy New Year, too.
Happy New Year. I know, just a couple days.
Hard to believe, huh?
Very.
That wraps up our program for today. Thanks, by the way, to the folks who sat in for me while I was on vacation over the past week or so. Enjoyed some time off, and now back at it here on a Monday, huh? Okay. Hope you can be with us tomorrow, 12:30, for the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Said the night wind to the little lamb, do you see what I see?
Do you see what I see?
Way up in the